You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. Are friends with fantasy benefits. Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh man, I've been hard since you said hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast. I gotta say, they're trying to keep us out of New York, Justin, but they can't keep us down. We're still gonna go.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
They're trying to keep us out of New York. Someone is trying to keep me out of Disneyland next week. It's been one of those kind of couple days.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
You can't go issues. Around kids, though, right? When you have that kind of thing, you can't go by kids.
Exactly. Supposedly, it violates my restraining order.
And there's kids in New York and there's kids in Disney, so I think you're screwed.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode are Mike and Matt. Matt, how you doing?
I'm good, buddy. How are you?
I'm having one of those days. Not a very great day, but I'm excited to talk some baseball, kind of tune out real life shit that's been going on, that's been annoying me, and you know, talk about some fantasy baseball and some pitchers.
Yeah, man, I always love having our guests on, one of the best at talking about pitchers, so we all learned something today, right?
Mm-hmm. And when we had him on last year, I wasn't able to be on because I had a previous commitment, and so this year the same thing was going to happen. We were supposed to start starting pitching next week, and I moved the starting pitching week a week earlier just so I could talk to our guest today. We'll get to him in one moment.
One of the perks of being the boss, huh?
Exactly, right?
Yeah.
We have Mike Warner on. Mike, how are you?
I am doing well. I gotta say, they're trying to keep us out of New York, Justin, but they can't keep us down. We're still gonna go.
They're trying to keep us out of New York. Someone is trying to keep me out of Disneyland next week. It's been one of those kind of couple days dealing with some issues.
You can't go
around
kids, though, right? When you have that kind of thing, you can't go by kids.
Exactly. Supposedly, it violates my restraining order.
And there's kids in New York and there's kids in Disney, so I think you're screwed.
Yeah, probably. joining us today is our good friend Doug Thorburn of the Baseballholics podcast. We had Sammy Reed on last week, Doug on this week to talk starting pitching. Doug, how are you?
I'm doing well. I mean, it's March. I mean, March is such a great time of year. I'm so stoked for baseball season.
I'm just so excited. We were just talking about watching the WBC. We have Chinese Taipei versus Israel on right now.
That's beautiful.
It's riveting stuff.
Oh, man. Guys, you will never get to see again.
Mm-hmm. And the resurgence of Eric Gagne.
Baseball.
Hey, man. Mike Davis.
What did I just say?
I said in the resurgence of Eric Gagne. Doug, why don't you tell people, for those who don't know who you are, though they should, why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself and then where you can be reached on social media?
I'm a pitching guy first and foremost. Mechanics are kind of my focus, but you know, to me, it's all about a three-pronged approach with pitchers. It's mechanics, it's stuff, it's stats. It's all kind of process versus outcome. So, pitching is really my thing. So an episode like this is perfect for me. I just have been in depth with pitching for the last 13 years. And right now I'm a writer and an editor over at RotoWire. And people can find, I do a podcast with Sammy Reed called Baseballholics Anonymous. So that people can check out our website at baseballholics.libsyn.com. Or they can follow me on Twitter, Doug_Thorburn. Last name is Thorburn. And yeah, I'm stoked to talk some pitching.
Yeah, if you haven't checked out the Baseballholics podcast, it is fantastic. You guys do a great job over there. It is definitely like at the top of my list on iTunes for podcasts to go to as soon as it comes out. So definitely go check that out over on iTunes, Stitcher, all the podcast aggregators.
All right. Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. And you were at the Barf Draft. So you guys covered that course. In your last episode. So definitely go.
We did, yes.
Go check out. You guys did it during second base, which is a segment on your on the show. How did you enjoy the Barf League before we jump into the pitchers, actually?
Oh, man, it was such a good time. It was so well done. I mean, to show up and to have gumbo and to have, I mean, you know, we're at a bar, so we got drinks on, set up for us and everything. And I always love insider drafts. I just feel that it's not even so much the early phases. It's the mid game and the end game where all the diamonds in the rough are taken. And this did not disappoint. It's amazing when looking at the rosters just to see how shallow some of them are. It's awesome.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun to actually get to officially meet you finally and Sammy. It was really nice to outdraft you guys. So we'll see how it plays out.
Well, yeah, easy for you to say. I drafted David Price. So.
Oh yeah, that didn't work out.
Yeah, that took a week.
I'm sure I've got injuries coming. So let's jump right into our pitchers. Got a lot to talk about today. We'll start off with Max Scherzer, who's actually the first pitcher I took in the Barf League. But Doug, are you worried about this finger injury that is making him change grips?
I am worried about it, especially considering that he's had an entire offseason to get over this problem that was bugging him last year, and that hasn't done the job. So now he's talking about he's trying this three-finger fastball, and I don't know if that's going to impact command or if that's going to – I don't know what that's going to do. It's going to impact movement. There's a lot of question marks, and we haven't seen him on the mound. So until we see him, we're all just guessing at this point. And at that point in a fantasy draft, I mean, you're talking your top tier guys. I mean, I sure was number two before any news of this stuff came out. Now I just don't feel good about him. I don't feel like you can take him in the second round, but that's where he's going.
Yeah, that's where I took him. I took him, I think, with like the seventh pick in the second round in a 12-team draft. Matt, what are your thoughts on Scherzer? Are you scared of him this year?
Yeah, this makes me a little bit worried. I mean, I did just take him in a startup dynasty in the third round, so I'm still kind of on board with that. With him as the overall skill set, I mean, yeah, the walks went back to the normal rate. Like, I think what he did in 2015 was kind of absurd with the 1.3 walks per nine, 3.8 walk percentage. I mean, that's his career best in any season, and it's not close. It came back a little bit. FIP was a 3.2 despite the ERA being obviously won the Cy Young. The home runs were kind of weird. It's a little fluky spike there. But yeah, you kind of have to worry about it. Like Doug said, we don't really know what changing his grip's going to do. Right? Like pitchers are creatures of habit. If anybody is, it's pitchers. And you know, anything small can affect their mechanics, can affect velocity, command, control, everything. And hopefully it's not anything that goes to there. I mean, Scherzer is at the top of the class, but he's got a lot more question marks than he had right now than he's ever had, and it's kind of scary. So I don't know if you can make that top 30 pick investment in Scherzer anymore.
Mike, are you willing to make that investment?
I mean, top 30, absolutely. But, you know, NL labor happened, yesterday as we're recording right now, and Max Scherzer ended up being the third highest starting pitcher bid on. I think that it's kind of a mixed bag. You know, some people don't worry about the injury much because they feel like since he's come to camp that everything isn't necessarily fine, but that everything's going to work out as the season goes on. The skills aren't the issue with Scherzer. I think everybody knows just how great he is as a fantasy asset. He's absolutely a borderline first rounder if everything's healthy and he's doing all right there. But I am worried about the injury. I used to pitch growing up. I pitched for a number of years, and I can only imagine having a problem with one of my fingers, how much it would actually affect me pitching, and especially command. That's what it all comes down to with pitching. And I just can't envision this being a good thing for him. So while I don't think there's a ton of risk here. I think that he's still going to be a top 10 to 12 pitcher, regardless of how his knuckle is. I do think that he is being overdrafted a bit based on the fact that he is coming into camp at the beginning of the season with an injury.
Doug, did you want to jump in again real quick?
Oh, just as far as I did want to throw him a bone as far as how well he pitched, even while he's dealing with this issue late last year. In the final month of the season, he actually put up a 3.29 ERA in six starts. Granted, he was facing Atlanta twice, Philly, Miami twice. I mean, he was playing some crap teams. But he did strike out 46 batters in 38 innings. So, and the other thing I want to comment on was I just kind of want to get your guys' thoughts on his delivery, because he's got sort of an interesting thing going on there.
A lot of coiling and recoiling and a lot of movement. When you have a lot of movement, a lot of things can go wrong. But I mean, obviously, he's been very successful. I'm nowhere near as qualified as you are, Doug, on pitching mechanics. But I mean, from what I see, I wouldn't recommend teaching it to anybody. But it works for him. So
I like his delivery. I think that's something that he struggled with at the beginning of his career in terms of honing in on his balance and being able to remain consistent with his mechanics. But once he's figured it out, you know, around the 2013 area, it's been kind of smooth sailing. So, I mean, you're definitely the most qualified to talk about his mechanics, but you know, really for the last few years, I think that he's been pretty solid in that department. Now you can kind of see him when you're watching him adjust in the middle of the game. You know, sometimes he's, you know, he can kind of tell whenever he's kind of falling off the mound a bit or, you know, having to readjust the way he's doing things. But I think that's part of the great thing of watching him is just because it is a little unorthodox, being able to watch him make adjustments in the middle of the game, I think is pretty interesting.
Cool. The reason I ask is he's the most exaggerated version in Major League Baseball of what I call a spine flexion. So it's like a headbutting move. Yeah, right near release point. He looks like a British football hooligan, like the way he headbutts is crazy. it's so forceful. And to me, it really stands out. But the reason I ask is I want to know for other people who are watching the game intently but aren't necessarily watching this stuff directly, because I can't help myself. I've been doing it for way too long now. It's natural, you know. And to me, it really, really stands out. I don't actually think it's a problem. I think it's an exaggerated version of something that a lot of great pitchers do. I wouldn't, like you said, I wouldn't necessarily recommend it. But I don't really have a problem with it. I just was more curious because it stands out so much to me, and I'm curious the extent to which it stands out when watching him pitch.
It looks like it'd be, I mean, like Mike nailed it, I think, earlier. I said, it looks like it would be hard to consistently repeat. It looks like he found something that works for him. You know what I mean? It clicked for him in 2014, and it's been effective ever since. But, I mean, I'm glad you brought that up because it is kind of goofy, which is good.
Oh, it's real goofy.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah, I'm not as worried about Scherzer in terms of this year, and obviously I took him in the second round of the Barf draft because I was a little shocked he even fell as far as he did. To me, I think it's nice that he doesn't have to pitch in the WBC now. At least I don't think he's going to pitch in the WBC now. And so that alleviates a little bit of it. I think if the Nationals were really concerned, we'd be hearing a little bit more about this in terms of them looking for other options. And considering they traded away a lot of their options in the minor leagues to start this year, I think they're not as concerned. So until I start seeing red flags from the organization, I'm fine paying the price for Scherzer. Like Doug said, he was fine with the injury towards the end of last year. I think he, if I can get him any sort of discount, I feel like I did in the Barf draft, I'm all for it. Let's move on. Talk about Jake Arrieta, who had a down year considering his previous two seasons with the Cubs, but it was still excellent. Matt, you're a Cubs fan.
All right, come on, man.
What are your thoughts on Arrieta this year? Can he continue to repeat the success we've seen from him?
It depends. I mean, what success is real? I mean, he's been really good the last 3 years, but he's been different in the last 3 years. I don't know if that's weird to say, but you look at the numbers, he's lost his command a little bit last year, and I mean, he wants that Max Scherzer money next year, so we're gonna see how that goes. I'm trying to say that without laughing because there's no chance he gets that. But I mean, I think Arrieta, though, to be honest, is kind of one of the most underrated guys right now. He's going a lot lower than he should for the guy that puts up the numbers that he does. I mean, the strikeout rate is – it did dip last year, but, it's still very serviceable. The walk rate spiked up. That's the concern. The fastball command seemed to waver at times, which obviously the fastball command sets up everything else. The mechanics, again, he looks like a hard guy to repeat, but obviously he's in peak physical shape if you – have seen all the stories with him doing all that yoga and all that workout stuff. But he's free agent next year. Like I said, it's going to be really interesting to see what kind of money he gets from somebody. I wouldn't mind grabbing him. I haven't ended up with him anywhere because he's just going in a spot for me that I like a lot of the bats around there. So I probably won't own Arrieta anywhere, but I'm not avoiding him. It's just how it's worked out.
Mike, are you avoiding Arrieta or are you fine with the price?
It's not that I'm avoiding him. I like a few starters a little bit later on. The thing about Arrieta that stood out to me last year, and I still am a very big Arrieta fan, is that the command just, had a trickle down effect. He couldn't really command his sinker. And then on top of that, while it doesn't show up in the first pitch strike rate, while he would throw strikes, they wouldn't be good strikes. And then it would kind of have a trickle down effect into his slider and his curve and all the secondary offerings not being swung at as much. And then, that kind of yielded to him dropping in terms of his walks per nine. It dropped to pretty much where it was in his career at 3.5. Last year, it was 3.2 for his career. The year before was at 1.9. So I think that if he can get that command just a little bit more under control than it was last year, then we could see a guy that finishes in the top five among starting pitchers again. My biggest issue, though, is, I have him ranked 12th among starters, and there's guys just behind him that I definitely feel more comfortable going with, Johnny Cueto being the number one guy. I think Johnny Cueto is the one name that a lot of people are just not disregarding, but I would gladly take Cueto almost 10 picks behind him as my ace and feel good about it, rather than take Arrieta, who his whole career has been inconsistent. And while, again, I love the upside, I just don't know if he'll be able to get the command in check enough to be as elite as he was a few years prior. And he's going as the number seven starter right now.
I didn't mention this earlier. I'm kind of worried about Arrieta having an injury risk this year. I mean, all the innings he's piled up the last couple few years are significantly more than he has in previous years past. I know I'm a subscriber to the theory, which this might be sound dumb to a lot of people, but I think pitchers have limited bullets. I think injury prevention only goes so far. I think you're bound to have something pop up, and I think the workload he's had has been enormous. I mean, you look at the innings totals, that's not even counting the playoff run he made last year, which was obviously a deep one, and the year before that he pitched in the wild card game and also pitched in the NLCS and DS. So that's a lot of innings on his arm, so I'm just serious. I'm kind of scared on that, but not – I mean, every pitcher's got injury risk, so it's nothing more than anybody else, but I think it's something that is playing into his price for me.
Doug, what are your thoughts on Arrieta for this year?
He's really interesting, and I'm glad that it's been talked about his drop in command, because not only did that walk rate and walks aren't always the best proxy for command, obviously, but in his case, it is a reflection of something. It, like you pointed out, it nearly doubled last year. He also had 16 wild pitches, which was more than the previous two seasons combined, despite pitching fewer innings. He also had an extremely low hit rate. Granted, it was only 6.3 hits per nine. It was actually higher than the year before. It was like 5.9. But that's one thing that makes, I think, projecting Cubs pitchers really difficult, is that they're going from a historically great defense last season. One that, every single ball in play was getting scooped up, it seemed like.
252 BABIP allowed.
Yeah, it won't be repeated. Insane. There's no way.
Can't be a little bit of luck in there, a little bit of skill, defensive positioning. It's not going to happen again.
Well, not only that, but now Fowler is gone.
Schwarber's playing defense.
Right, you're right. This is going to be a very different defense, and one that even if it was the same crew of guys, would be assumed they were going to regress to some degree. So, I think projecting Cubs pitchers is really tough. I think Arrieta is a really interesting case because I see a guy where he lives and dies by. It's such a simple mechanical thing, but it's also the most difficult thing for all pitchers to master, and that's timing and repeating timing. So doing everything in the same time sequence, and I'm talking hundredths of a second, but being able to repeat their stride, for example. In Arrieta, that was what made him what he was. I mean, he with the Orioles, he used to be a guy that every single delivery was completely different. So I like to time a guy from the time his lift leg lifts off the ground to the time it comes back into contact. So I call it foot strike. And, you know, most guys are within about a tenth of a second. You know, that's roughly. He was within, he had some that were 0.9, others that were 1.4, 1.5. He was all over the stinking place. And then he went to the Cubs. And that was one of the first things that pitching coach Chris Bosio worked on with him, was ironing out that timing. He had some pitches where he would stop at the top. He had some where he would try side-stepping and everything. And they really ironed it out, and we saw the results. I mean, by no means should we expect that going forward. But last season, he really regressed in that respect. So the fact that it's the same pitching coach, that he still has Chris Bosio there, they know what the issue is. They know how to fix it. I'm optimistic that he can get back some of what made him incredible. But again, you have to factor in the whole defense thing and all that. So it's a very complicated case. I actually have him valued pretty high. He's number 9 among starting pitchers on my board.
Yeah, I believe I have him at 8 on my board. And to me, it's a risk reward, because I think there are guys going behind him. I believe Matt or Mike mentioned that he's going currently 7th among starting pitchers. I think there are guys behind him that have safer floors, but not nearly as high of ceiling. For instance, I think Lester has a much safer floor, but I don't see Lester being a guy that could finish as a top 3 starter. And so for me, I see Arrieta having that ability if he can get the mechanical issues kind of fixed up. It's kind of whether or not you're willing to take that risk. I tend to, in spite of the fact that I am still taking Max Scherzer, I tend to be a little bit safer with my first starting pitcher and stay away from the guys that I feel a little bit more risky. And so I've missed out on Arrieta. But if he were to fall, and he has fallen as low as 55th, in terms of his max pitch pick on NFBC drafts, I would be totally fine kind of taking the gamble. But then I would probably want to pair him with a guy as a number 2 that I feel is a little bit safer. Maybe even doing something like Mike talked about with Cueto, double tapping on a Arrieta and Cueto in an NFBC league, or getting a guy like a Hamels, who I feel like is a horse that'll at least get me 200 pretty decent innings. Let's move on and talk about Yu Darvish. And I put him on the list because at the Barf draft, Doug, after the draft, talked to me a little bit about his thoughts on Yu Darvish. And so I thought it was a really interesting thought process, him being a free agent after this year and potentially seeing the Rangers just pretty much work him into the ground and getting as much out of them as they can before he hits the free agent market. Doug, you want to expand on your thoughts on Yu Darvish?
Yeah, I mean, with Darvish, he's only thrown 150 innings twice for the Rangers. It's a 6-year deal, and they've only gotten 2 years where, let's say, they got their money's worth. And I know he's not getting paid a ton, but he's only making half the money as far as what the Rangers put out to give. They put out $102 million over 6 years. And when you look at other pitchers who underwent the surgery in the spring like he did, especially the early spring, one comp, especially a veteran pitcher, there's very few veterans that are at that timing. And I tried to research it, and there weren't a whole lot of examples. But one example was Adam Wainwright. And Adam Wainwright, 2 years after, or it was 3 years after the Tommy John, but his second, and first really full season, but second year back on the mound, he led the majors with 240 innings pitched. I'm not saying Darvish is going to lead the majors in innings pitched, but the Rangers have absolutely no reason to withhold anything. It's time to let the reins go with him because, yeah, they are going to try to recoup their investment. And from his perspective, he wants to prove that he can shoulder a big workload so he can make his free agent dollars. So I think there's a lot of incentive to put him out there as much as possible. And given that he basically is an automatic 11 Ks per nine before and after the surgery, I'm huge on him this year. I think he's the best threat at 300 Ks.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Darvish for this season?
Yeah, the more and more, or I guess the closer we get to the regular season, the more I'm starting to like Yu Darvish as an ace. The skills are absolutely elite. You know, Baseball HQ uses a metric called base performance value. It's kind of a summary of everybody's skills all lumped together into one score. And his BPVs over the course of the 2013, 2014, and 2016 have all been among the elite starting pitchers. His strikeout to walk ratio last year was among the top five with at least 80 innings pitched. And, you know, mind you, he was coming off Tommy John, where you would figure the stuff would kind of be diminished a bit. And his velocity for the season was actually the highest of his career. I love the guy. I think that the Rangers are going to probably throw him as many innings as they can. I know that this is a team with playoff aspirations, so they might have to do a little bit of damage control there and limit things a little bit. But in general, I think that Darvish is a legit pick for this year. He went about pick 60 in the labor mix draft. I think that that's amazing value right there. In terms of NFBC, to this point, he's been a top 35 pick. So, you know, whoever made that pick in labor actually got a really nice steal based on that cost there. But overall, I think that Darvish is probably better suited for shallow formats if you're worried about the risk in terms of the innings. But I think that he's a viable play in deeper formats as well, because I think the skills are so great that the floor is actually decent. And, you know, even though you're worried about the innings.
Matt, are you worried about the innings, or are you all in on Darvish?
I kind of lumped him. He's got the injury tag for me, obviously, with the Tommy John, and working him this hard, I think that's better for him. If what Doug thinks is kind of happens, I think that's better. Obviously for his fantasy value, but I think it makes him a better pitcher throwing more, because I mean he's used to that regimen in Japan. They throw more. They have to dial it back when you come to America a little bit. Tanaka's made a comment about how he doesn't throw as much since he came here. So I mean, you look at Darvish. The thing I kind of lumped him. He's going right around Strasburg for me. This kind of they're ranked like right next to each other, and I think if I mean not to derail this conversation, but if I was picking between one of them two, I mean, and they both have upside to be top 10 starting pitcher in the game, but I think you got to bake the injury risk in. Yeah, Darvish isn't as high as Strasburg's injury risk, but I think I'll pass on Darvish. I would actually probably take Steven Strasburg only because Strasburg has the upside to be the second best starter in the game behind Kershaw. And I don't think Darvish has quite like that, because I mean I think with the ballpark and the amount of fly balls he gives up kind of puts a limit on the absolute number one. He's still number one, but he's not going to be in the top tier of that because he's not ground ball oriented. He's in a bad park for his skills, but the strikeouts, you can't argue with that. The command came back plus some after the surgery, and like I said, the only knock I have is the fly balls in that ballpark, which is going to lead to some little bit more home runs than normal. But I mean, you can't hate Darvish, but I'll go somewhere else this year.
I don't know if it's the fact that I got burnt by Strasburg. I traded for him in the Barf League like two starts before he got injured. Or if it's just, you know, I just don't trust the injury history. But, I mean, to me, Strasburg is a faint breeze away from, you know, tearing his UCL. I don't want anything to do with Strasburg this year. So, for me, if you're comparing the two of those guys, I'm taking Darvish all day. And the more and more I think about Darvish, the more and more I look at the numbers, because, I mean, the thing that I cautioned people against last year with Darvish, and I was completely wrong, and I'll cop to that, was that his, you know, the last thing to come back typically when a guy comes back from Tommy John, and we didn't even know at the beginning, you know, prior to the season when he would be really coming back, was, you know, his command. And not only was his command, you know, arguably the best of his career last year, he came back sooner than most people thought. I think Doug is right in terms of the Rangers just running him out there and trying to get their money's worth this year from him. Plus, they need him to pitch, because outside of Hamels, they have nothing in that rotation, worth writing home about. They need him to go out there and perform as often as they can get him out there. So, I actually like Darvish a lot. I actually may probably move him up. I believe I had him around 11 in terms of my starting pitchers. I may move him up probably past Arrieta at 8. So I think Darvish is a pretty decent buy this year. Long term, I wouldn't want him in a dynasty keeper format. I'd probably be looking to sell. maybe halfway through this year or even at the end of this year. But in terms of 2017 only in redraft, I'm all aboard the Darvish train. Let's move on to another guy I was completely wrong on last year, and that was Zach Greinke, who moved from L.A. to Arizona, did not have a good start to his year, and struggled throughout. Mike, are you buying in on a Zach Greinke bounce back?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I do just want to mention one thing before I go into Greinke is StatCast is coming out with this amazing stat that we can use. It's called expected WOBA or expected OPS. And Yu Darvish was top five on the list. Max Scherzer top six. And I just kind of want to implement into this because I think, you know, as the years go on with StatCast, we're going to be able to use some of this stuff more and more. And it's just really exciting to kind of see something like that happen. So it kind of, you know, shows just how good Darvish was at, you know, mitigating the, you know, hard hit balls. And, you know, even if you took out the strikeout to walk ratio and everything, just the amount of batted balls that were, you know, going to go for hits were really not, there really just weren't too many of them in Darvish's case. But anyways, going with Greinke, I think that he's an absolute bounce back. I have him in my top 15 among starting pitchers. I don't think he's going to be as good as 2015, where he was absolutely outrageous, but I also don't think it's going to be as bad as 2016. I mean, this is an absolute professional. He's not too old. He's only 33. And, you know, really his command wasn't as bad as people might have thought. His swing strike rate was pretty consistent with his career marks. His first pitch strike rate was at 68%. The, you know, year that he had, you know, in 2015, it was actually down at 64%. So he actually improved there. I mean, his home ERA at Chase Field was over 4.5. And I think that we can see that regress to the mean a little bit. Greinke is, you know, everything that I've read on him is that he's healthy. He also had some injuries last year. He's healthy. He's going into this year with a clear mind. I think the Diamondbacks are, you know, going to do everything they can to make him feel comfortable. He's too good of a pitcher to go back down to being outside of the top, you know, 40 starting pitchers. I think that this is an absolute obvious, you know, rebound candidate. And I've pretty much been getting him everywhere.
Doug, are you buying in on a Greinke bounce back?
Yes, because it's inevitable. I mean, he has to be better than last year. But at the same time, yeah, I think caution needs to be exercised because this is a guy, I just think the venue is really bad for him. I mean, Chase Field is a notorious, I mean, it's the second highest elevation. It's only like 1,250 feet or whatever. But it's definitely not a pitcher's ballpark. And it doesn't, I forget, I don't have the readings right in front of me, but it's not great for batter home runs. It's great for singles, doubles, triples. And Greinke's been giving up hits his entire career. He's great at killing the walks, and he's great at suppressing runs even when he's having to pitch from the stretch with runners on base. But at the same time, if there's one weakness he's always had, it's the hit rate. And so I see him moving to a place that favors guys getting lots of base hits. So I think that, you know, it's kind of funny to see such a terrible season to follow such an amazing season, because I don't think either one is within even the range of expectations for this year. But at the same time, I'm not that big on him. I just don't think the upside is that steep, and especially because the strikeouts aren't that impressive. And so you're looking at a guy that he's going to rely on his defense a decent amount, and we have yet to see how that defense is going to look for this year.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Zach Greinke for this year?
To copy a lot of what Mike said, I'm more on toward where Mike said. I think Greinke's a guy I've been ending up with in quite a bit of leagues. The draft position is outstanding. I think getting him outside the top 20 starting pitchers is insane. Yeah, he's not going to rebound to 2015 levels. He had a kind of a luck-fueled year that year with the hit rate and stuff, and that kind of came back to normal. First pitch strike, like you said, command is not going to be, it should be better than last year. I think second half he had his ERA was over six due to the oblique injury, so I'm going to chalk up a lot of that to that. Yes, the first half was like a 3.6 ERA, which is still, I think that's probably the baseline, what you can, or I should say baseline. I think that's probably where he'll end up being if he gets a full season, right around that 3.6 mark, which is still plenty useful. But I kind of agree with what Doug said also, with the upside being kind of capped. I'm kind of right in the middle of those two. Yasmani Tomas running around in the outfield is probably not going to help him too much. The shortstop situation, Marte and Nick Ahmed. Nick Ahmed's a good defensive guy, but, I mean, he's coming off injury. If he loses the tick off his range, Brendan Drury at second just started playing there full-time. you know, the outfield's huge in that park, like Doug alluded to. A lot of it's more the doubles and triples that get down. Coors Field light in that aspect. But I like Greinke with a, you know, I'm not drafting him. He's my ideal number two starter, to be honest. If I can get somebody in front of him, that's outstanding. I think he's a steal at 21 off the board, and that's where he's at right now. So
I think he's – oh, go ahead, Doug.
So I just wanted to interject really quick. I should note, I actually do have him ranked 17th on my list. I still think highly of him. But like I said, I just think the – and as you repeated, I just think the upside is limited. I think that's the perfect way of saying it, is that he's a great number two. He's exactly the kind of guy you should look for in a, as a number two starter for a fantasy staff. But you don't want him to be an ace. And I do think highly of him, but I just – I'm all about risk-reward. And so he's just not that sexy of a pick.
Yeah, for me, I've been a huge supporter of him, and I was a huge supporter last year. And for a lot of the offseason, I really felt like, you know, he was a steal where he's going. I'm now feeling a little bit more tepid on him, and part of it is that I don't think he offers the strikeout potential that some of the other guys in his area offer. I do wonder if maybe 3.5, 3.6 is kind of the ceiling in terms of his ERA. I do like some of the additions that the Diamondbacks made in terms of their catching situation, because Wellington Castillo is not necessarily the best catcher in the world, the addition of Mathis and Iannetta should be an improvement in terms of framing. And game calling, so maybe that helps a little bit. I like Greinke as a person and as a baseball player that isn't afraid of statistics, isn't afraid of, you know, kind of the data out there. He's not necessarily, you know, there's great stories about Eno Saris and him talking and him just, like, interviewing Eno about things that he can do to make himself better through numbers. There's part of me that really pulls for a guy like that because it makes us as analysts kind of feel a little bit more important. But in terms of his upside, I just worry that it's not really there. And, you know, he is a guy that has struggled with injuries and things within his head, not always being copacetic. So I think that I'm probably going to miss out because I just think there are guys going later than him that I like as number twos as a discount also, so that have higher upside. So, you know, a guy like, you know, Danny Duffy that we'll talk about here in a minute, but Garrett Cole, who we'll talk about in a little bit, Danny Salazar, you know, maybe they have some question marks too, but I think they have a much higher ceiling than he does.
I like what you said, Justin. You know, you brought up the fact that Greinke doesn't strike out a lot of guys. That's definitely the big downside for fantasy. He only had 7.6 last year, just a little bit over 8 in his spectacular 2015 with the Dodgers. One thing I like to do, I'm targeting Greinke as my number two fantasy pitcher, but one thing I'll do is I'll draft somebody like Dellin Betances or Andrew Miller, somebody that I can add, you know, they'll give me 40, they'll give me 50, 60 innings, but they'll give me 90 to 100 strikeouts, and it kind of offsets what Greinke does. You know what I'm saying? So I like someone like that with the lacks of strikeout upside. I like to grab a reliever like that to pile him on at the end.
I think for me, I'm more apt to take a guy like Greinke as my number two if I have, maybe one of the top three or four pitchers as my number one. You know, someone that I feel like really safe about, so, you know, a Baumgartner, a Kluber, Kershaw. But if I'm kind of delving into the bottom end of my pitcher one, I don't want Greinke as my number two because I feel like there's a little bit too much risk on both ends and I could be looking at two guys that, you know, I'm not going to pair Chris Archer with Zach Greinke and feel comfortable going into the season.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Let's talk about the aforementioned Danny Duffy. I'll throw it to you, Doug. What are your thoughts on him? Can he sustain the breakout that we saw last year?
I'm crossing my fingers hoping that he can, but honestly, I don't think he can. There were some slight mechanical improvements last year. He's a big spine tilter. What I mean by that is he curls his back like a question mark as he gets near release point. And he's kind of always done that. But in the past, he had a very shallow release point. He released the ball, his arm was very late, so he released the ball really shallow. Last year, it looked to me like he extended that release point by a good amount. I would love to get the TrackMan data on that, because TrackMan actually can tell you exactly what the release point extension was. That said, and even acknowledging that, hey, this guy, he increases his velocity by an average of a mile an hour. He cut his walk rate way down. It was like 2.1 walks per nine. He had more than a strikeout per inning last year. But this is a guy who's coming off such down numbers in those same categories. He was walking way too many guys, striking out not nearly enough guys. In fact, you look at it, in 2015, he struck out 6.7 per nine. And 2014, it was 6.8 per nine. So all of a sudden, that jumps to a 9.4. And you look at the fact that he gave up a ton of home runs as well. I mean, his ERA was a 3.51 in his breakout season. And to me, mechanically, he hasn't changed that much. He's made some cool improvements, but not that big of an improvement. Not, you know, 50% higher K rate or 50% lower walk rate. And really, when you see a guy whose home run rate is spiking, but his walk rate is falling, that's an indicator that his strike throwing may have increased, but he's not necessarily having more command. And when I watch him pitch, this is a guy who's getting away with missed targets all day long. So I'm not a Duffy guy. I will not end up with him in any league. I've got him way down my rankings, and I think the upside is there. He did it once. He can do it again. But this is a 28-year-old who's never won more than 12 games and has never pitched more than 180 innings. So I have a lot of concerns and doubts about Danny Duffy.
Matt, do you have any concerns about Danny Duffy?
Man, I was kind of excited about Danny Duffy. well, I mean, he's a guy I'll take a shot on. I liked what I saw a lot of that. I mean, the command improved with the curveball. The curveball got better. The first pitch strike was way better. He got a really, really nice swing rate on the breaking balls, or swinging strike percentage on the breaking balls, up around 20%, which is very, very nice. K minus walk percentage at 20%, that's good. But again, I mean, I guess the mechanical aspect, I guess he's not great. I guess that's probably why the Royals were so quick to move him to the bullpen when he came up. But I mean, he's a guy I'm investing in. I think he's a guy, he's 28 years old, like you said. I think he's going to take the next step forward. I love the ballpark. Yeah, he gave up 20 home runs. I think that's a little bit fluky in that ballpark. 13% homer to fly ball, that's going to come down a little bit, and it kind of might regulate the numbers enough. The defense behind him is going to be good in Kansas City. It sort of always is. He did outpitch his FIP last year, his FIP and ex-FIP by 0.2, 0.3 of a run. So I guess that's a little bit optimistic. I like him because I think the ceiling is there, but I mean, the ceiling's not immense by any means. I don't think he's going to get much better in the overall ERA numbers, but I think he can just build on that by pitching more innings, is kind of what I'm hoping for with the same ratios, and I'll be perfectly fine with that.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Danny Duffy?
Sorry, watching a little bit of Ryan LaVarnway hit a bomb, two-run bomb. Oh, yeah, it's Israel, man, game.
Wow, well, I was stuck a little bit. I was trying to contain myself there. Yeah.
That's a name. But these Taipei fans, give it up to them. They're just cheering it on. That's the beauty
of
this.
Did you
see
that guy try to catch LaVarnway home run and hit him in the hands and he fell down? That was funny.
People get hurt like that, Matt. That's not funny.
Funny. It's funny. Because he dropped his nachos, too. It was funny.
Anyways, I'm just not interested in Duffy, and you guys have really touched on a lot of it. I don't believe that the control is going to be as good as it was last year. On top of that, you know, he was top 8 in strikeout to walk ratio, but he was also in the top 7 in terms of left on base rate among qualified starters. That's sure to regress. And I just don't like his spot. He's going about pick 100, and you know, we already mentioned Greinke. I'm obviously high on him. I like Kenta Maeda more, going pretty much right in front of him. And there's also another pitcher we're going to talk about here pretty soon that I have ranked as a top 10 guy this year. So I don't like the spot. I think there's going to be regression. And on top of all of that, he missed substantial time from Tommy John surgery, you know, back in 2012. He also had a flexor strain in 2013, missed more time in 2015. The health grade isn't good. The regression to the mean is coming in terms of his stats, and the draft price isn't good. I'm just all around not in.
Yeah, I mean, I have some questions about his, you know, the innings jump. You know, he threw 149 innings at the major league level in 2014, 136, you know, at the major league level in 2015, and then huge jump almost to 180 last year. And he was not good just the third time through the order. So, like, this is a guy, to me, that if you play in quality starts formats, you may miss some of those quality starts while you still get a few of the wins. I have his the third time through the order, he had a 5.88 ERA in 41 innings, compared to the first time through the order, 2.29, and the second time through the order, 3.04. I don't think this is a guy that can hold up long into games and long through the season. And, you know, I really want to be in on Danny Duffy because I bought him a lot last year, and it paid off really well. But I just think what Doug mentioned was, you know, very interesting and true. If we're looking at his breakout last year, it really wasn't that great. You know, I mean, he was good at stretches, but a 3.5 ERA is not like an elite kind of statistical line. I think he gets a little bit of the, you know, cover up from Kauffman Stadium, but, you know, on the road he can be blown up. His home run to fly ball rate was over 14% on the road last year. His left on base percentage was over 80%. I got to think that comes down a little bit. I think there's too many warning signs to really invest in him as a number two pitcher. If you're getting him as kind of a low end three or a four, that's fine to me, but currently going off as the 23rd starting pitcher in NFBC leagues, which means you're taking him as your number two starter, even in 12-team formats. For that reason, I'm out.
Disappointed in all of you.
Let me say one last thing. And forgive me, it's
crush
mechanical.
Crush him, Doug.
I can't help it. But if you're looking for, you know, trying to figure out why certain guys have low walk rates, but it seems like their command isn't that great, specifically look for guys where the biggest discrepancies occur are guys who are over the top. So they have over the top arm slots like Duffy. They tend to, when their deliveries miss time, they're going to miss high and they're going to miss low. It's actually pretty easy to get strikes on balls that miss high and miss low. But guys who have really low release points, the Bumgarners of the world, the Yu Darvishes of the world, those guys, when they're mistimed, they're going to miss inside and outside. It's really hard to get a strike on a pitch that's inside and outside. So those kind of players, they tend to have huge discrepancies between their walk rates and their command. Guys who are over the top, their command tends to be worse than their walk rate. But the fact is that when they miss targets and their arm is late or it's early, they can still get strikes. Guys like Bumgarner can't, which is part of what makes Bumgarner even more amazing. The other thing about guys who are over the top, they tend to have really high fly ball rates because when they miss, they leave the ball up. Well, Danny Duffy last year, he gave up 37% ground balls, which is an incredibly low rate. This is according to Baseball Prospectus. I'm sure whatever source you use will verify that he's been basically a fly ball guy his entire career. So it's throws over the top, who's a low walk rate, and is giving up a ton of fly balls, Drew Smiley, then you have a guy whose command is not nearly as strong as all of those indicators statistically might make you think.
Top 10 in fly ball percentage last year, Danny Duffy, 43%.
There you go.
Yep.
In a good ballpark for it.
He is in a good ballpark for it.
You're absolutely right.
Let's move on and talk about Gerrit Cole. And last year, Mike Warner shit all over my Gerrit Cole love. And I couldn't understand why he hated him so much, and he just felt like he was going too high. But this year, it seems, after winning that round, he has come out, and he is just bold predicting the fuck out of Gerrit Cole. So, Mike, take it away.
Yeah, it's complete role reversal from last year. Like, last year, I'm doing nothing but saying, do not draft Gerrit Cole, he's overrated, you know, blah, blah, blah. But now the price is too good. And honestly, this is what it all comes down to. How risk-averse do you like being? Because Gerrit Cole certainly has missed time. I mean, he missed a lot of last year, and on top of that, he wasn't effective. And then, you know, he had his breakout in 2015, and then the year before, he also got injured. So if you feel like he has a chance to pitch a full season, you know, 30 starts this year, then I think that he's going to be a top 10 starter. I'm not willing going to say he's going to be a 30-start guy, but I do think that he will maintain health. The, you know, a lot of the Tommy John precursors show that velocity trends down a little bit, and his velocity was solid all year, you know, despite, you know, pitching and then falling off for a while and then pitching again. For the most part, the elbow was the problem, but it wasn't something that derailed his velocity, and I'm pretty much throwing last year's numbers out the window. At the end of the day, if you feel you know, like you can take on a little bit of risk. Gerrit Cole is going at a very affordable price, about, you know, 115 right now in NFBC leagues. And it's about the same in terms of, you know, labor. And I'm sure Tout will probably be about the same as well. But I have him as a top 10 starting pitcher because when he is right, that is exactly what he is. And, you know, when you look at some of the starters at the top tier here, Chris Sale, you could easily see him falling outside the top 10. John Lester, absolutely. Jake Arrieta, absolutely. Justin Verlander, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot, and Max Scherzer, if his, you know, knuckle, you know, tends to be a problem, there's a lot of room for Gerrit Cole to slip in there. And I think that this is an opportunity to buy on a guy that has shown us at least one season that he can put it all together. Will it happen this year? I can't guarantee it, but if he is healthy, I will say for sure that he will be a top 20 starter.
Doug, what are your thoughts on Gerrit Cole?
You know, I really want to be that excited about him.
Be that excited, Doug.
I used to be that excited about him. I mean, who throws a 99-mile-an-hour pitch with that kind of arm-side run? That's insane. No one should be able to throw that crap. I have been all about this guy. He's got an incredible delivery. I gave him a 6 out of a possible 7. I'm doing the series for RotoWire right now where I'm trying to integrate projected stats with projected stuff and mechanics and all that good stuff. And I consider his mechanics to be B+, A- quality, almost straight A. And there's only like 10 guys in the majors who have that. That said, the more I look into his case, the more bummed I get. I mean, he's only thrown more than 138 innings once. His K rate has gone down like 3 straight seasons while his walk rate is going the other direction. His home run rate has been nice and low, but if he gives back some of that, if all this, a few more balls into the yard, all of a sudden his ERA starts looking a lot uglier. I want to root for this guy so much because the raw skills are absolutely there. I do think he has top 10 ceiling, but I didn't realize until I dug into it just how much of a risk it is that of him falling well short of that.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Gerrit Cole?
I just want to add that I sniped the mic for Gerrit Cole in the FWFB staff.
You shut your stupid mouth.
You sniped me as well, buddy, because I would have taken him before it got to Mike.
Shut your stupid mouths, both of you.
Well, I guess with Cole, I mean, yeah, it's kind of with the injury, the elbow injury kind of scares you off. But you got to look at things like the price you're paying. 113 overall, you can afford if he's going to spend some time on the DL. I mean, look at the guy right after him, Rich Hill. He's kind of in the same boat. Another guy we're going to touch on, Danny Salazar. A couple injury-prone guys right there, and they're all kind of stacked on top of each other. I don't think that's a coincidence. Gerrit Cole, I think the upside's there. Watching him pitch, it's in a good ballpark. One of the best defensive outfields behind him. The infield should be fine, too. I like Gerrit Cole a lot. Not as much as Mike. I don't think anybody does. But I do think the upside is there, and at the 28th starter off the board, I think there's a very, very good chance that he finishes in the top, you know, top 15 to 20 starters, and that wouldn't be shocked at all. So I'm on the Gerrit Cole train.
See, and we should again clarify. It's kind of like the other case with Greinke, where I actually think I'm sitting on that same train because I've got him ranked like 24th overall. I think the NFBC value is good. It's just I went from thinking I was all about Gerrit Cole this year to being disappointed down to what it seems like the consensus feels.
Yeah, I think it's all about price for me too, because I worry about the health. I worry about the fact, like Doug mentioned, that he doesn't have a ton of, you know, innings or large inning seasons under his belt. I was all in last year, and I was burnt hard. I took him as my number one starting pitcher in too many leagues. And paid the price for it. But I'm willing to get him at the price, especially if I can get him as my number three starter. If I'm getting him as my third starter, you know, I'm totally down for that. And then being able to kind of wait on starting pitching for a little bit longer. But if I'm getting him as my number two, I better have a really, really safe number one. So, you know, I better have a Bumgarner, I better have a Kluber, I better have a Kershaw, because While he has great upside, you know, the downside is obvious. We saw it last year, and probably could be worse. So I think it's all about, you know, kind of weighing the risk reward and what your team and pitching staff looks like when you get to that point in the draft or auction. You know, it's not a guy I necessarily want to gamble on if I'm not feeling super confident about my rotation thus far.
I just want to say this, though, about Cole. Like, yes, the stats, you know, two of the last 3 years haven't been good. But when he was actually healthy in 2015, the, you know, raw numbers were actually a lot better. I don't like to take away from somebody's skills when they when they're injured, kind of like one of the guys we're about to talk about here in a minute. You know, if I looked at everybody's stats based on them being injured, then I think that we would have a lot different ideas on people. But another topic here is we've gone through, what, 6-7 starters thus far, and they've all been from the top end range to kind of the mid pack, and every single one of them we've discussed some type of significant risk. So I think, like, in general, the pitching, just pitching in general this year, is a lot riskier from top to bottom than it has been in years past, despite what people think.
Yes, this is true. We're going to take a quick break. Be back right after this.
It's that time again. That's right. It's fantasy baseball season, and the Fantasy Black Book is back and better than ever. This is Joe Pisapia, author of the 9-time best-selling Fantasy Black Book series, number one right now on Amazon, on iTunes, and for the first time ever, the Fantasy Baseball Black Book can be held in your hand. Yes, what a beautiful world we live in. Head over to Amazon and buy your hard copy as well today. Baseball is coming. Are you ready?
All right, let's. We're gonna have to speed this up a little bit because.
I told you.
I want to try to keep. I want to try to keep this under an hour and a half, and we're running already close to an hour. So.
Hey, give the people what they want.
Yeah, so. I know, and I wish I had more time to record tonight, but I don't. So.
Damn, you're right. We've only gotten through six. Oh, crap.
So what we're going to do for the last – we've got six more guys to talk about. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to throw them out in pairs, and you can tell me who you'd rather have and why. So we'll start with Danny Salazar and Matt Harvey. Start with you, Matt. Who would you rather have, Danny Salazar or Matt Harvey? Or you could say neither or both.
I guess the thing with Salazar, I'll cut it quick on him, walks too many guys, has every bad injury under the sun in the last couple of years, the elbow, the tricep, and the shoulder, and he's gets the strikeouts, but he's never thrown over 180 innings, so I'm kind of out there. And Harvey, thoracic outlet syndrome, he's a complete wild card. He did not look great in his spring debut. Yes, it was only one 40-pitch sample, but the velocity readings, they're inconsistent. I saw like four different sources for the radar gun, so I have to see where he's sitting at. But I saw some that were as low as 88, some that were as high as 96, so there's no consistency there. From what I gathered, the Cardinals' B lineup was squaring them up pretty good. So, obviously major leaguers can hit a fastball, so it doesn't tell you anything, but they weren't getting fooled by anything. But I guess it was good for him just to get out there. But see, I would say neither one. They both have injury concerns. I guess where the prices are for both of these guys, I'll take Harvey because he's going about a round later than Salazar, and he's got the and the National League is, you know, if you have to split to make a choice between two guys, you always take the NL guys. So I'll go Harvey. I'm not going to cop out and say neither, but I'll say Harvey. And
Doug,
that's not confident.
Doug, Harvey or Salazar, neither or both.
Oh, I have to choose neither or both?
No,
oh,
no,
boy.
No. You can choose one or the other if you'd like. I'm just saying neither or both are also an option.
Yeah, I would say I'm still optimistic on Salazar. I think that the upside is that great. He can be that good. And I realize I just described Matt Harvey too, because his upside is even greater. It's just that we saw such different people. He was not the same pitcher last year. And I don't even mean just, I mean, obviously the stuff he was down to take. His command was a shell of himself, but his delivery went from being an A grade delivery. I mean, one of the better deliveries in the game. His use of momentum and power and his ability to get the ball deep. I mean, it was amazing. And he was throwing so shallow last year. Well, sure enough, in his first spring start, he had tons of spine tilt. He was throwing shallow again. He was starting to look like a shell of himself again. And granted, it's spring. A lot of guys early March look crappy and they'll figure it out. but the track record of guys coming back from thoracic outlet syndrome is not good. And so to me, he has to show it to me. He has to show me that there's still something there. And I think, I mean, we've seen the upside. I think he must still have that in him, but I don't know that he can ever get it back. Whereas Salazar, I know he can get it. It's going to be spotty.
Mike, who are you taking, or are you taking both or neither?
Well, I'll be fast. Not touching Matt Harvey. He has, obviously, he's had the outlet syndrome, but also had Tommy John in 2014. Also had a torn right UCL in 2013. Absolutely looked hideous in his first start. Not touching Harvey at any price this year. And Salazar was posting pretty much a career first half before getting injured for the first time in his career, might I add. I think that it's an obvious answer with Salazar.
All right, I'm taking both.
Oh, God.
And, you know, I think Mike just touched on the reason to jump on Salazar, but I'm mostly going to focus on Matt Harvey. And the reason I'm taking both is because of the bad start. He was dealing with some neck stiffness prior to the start that almost caused him to scratch it. He actually wore a heating pad, according to a news blurb over at RotorWire, during the start to kind of help alleviate the stiffness. I don't really look at numbers in terms of spring start, and I'm willing to give him another shot because I think this first awful start plummets his price. And if that happens, I'm all aboard because, like Doug said, and I've mentioned off and on throughout this off season, very few pitchers going where Matt Harvey is going has top 5 to 10 upside, and he does. And so I'm willing to take the gamble that late. Because you're talking about a guy going off the board currently as the number 34th starting pitcher after guys like Tanner Roark and Felix Hernandez at a pick 144 in front of just, you know, right at the same spot as Dallas Keuchel. That has extreme upside. And, you know, like I said, his price is going to plummet right now. So, I mean, if you're in drafts in the next week, I'm all aboard trying to buy him up and taking a shot because I think the upside is well worth the risk. And you're not going to see this kind of upside later on in the draft. So I think it's just worth it. I mean, I know it's a huge gamble, but why not given the price? Salazar, I believe in the skills. The injury issues are there, but again, you know, at this point in the draft, you're dealing with a lot of guys who have, you know, upside with mixed with kind of some injury issues. I'm willing, as long as he looks healthy through spring, to give him a shot and take him as a number 3 starting pitcher. You know, if I can get both of these guys on my team that is already fronted by a Clayton Kershaw or a strong number 1, I'm feeling pretty good.
Just to debunk your price theory, a couple of days after Harvey had his bad outing in NL-only labor, he ended up going for more than Jameson Taillon, Zach Greinke, very close to Gerrit Cole, $1 less than Kyle Hendricks. Kenta Maeda went for $3 less. The list goes on, but nobody is discounting Matt Harvey, at least right now, at least in the expert realm.
Wasn't his start yesterday?
No, it was the day before yesterday.
Okay. Well, I mean, you know, I mean, I could be wrong. You know,
It was yesterday. I watched it.
Well, it was in the evening. Either way, it was post the start. It was 100% after the start.
Okay. Well, I mean, you
know,
it
only takes one owner.
Yeah, it only takes that. Well, in an auction, it usually takes two. But I mean, in a draft, it only takes one. And you know, to me, I just, you know, there's the upside. Why not go for the upside? Are you telling me that you're not taking Gerrit Cole for virtually the same reasons?
Well, Gerrit Cole has a lot of the same problem, but Matt Harvey, I guess they are essentially the same players, but Harvey is going through I've had multiple friends of mine go through thoracic outlet syndrome, and it's never turned out well. So, I mean, I understand some pitchers have come back and been fine, but I watched the Harvey outing, and I understand the neck stiffness and stuff, but now he's going through neck stiffness too. Like, it's just always something with Harvey, and this is dating back to his minor league years too. I mean, as much as, like, Gerrit Cole has risk, I think Harvey has the same amount of risk, and I also don't think that the upside is that much higher for Harvey. I mean, this is also saying that his stuff just is going to be completely the same as it was, you know, 2 years ago. I mean, last year he looked absolutely horrendous. And yes, I'm the type of guy that doesn't like to base skills off of somebody's health, but the velocity went down for him. Gerrit Cole, the velocity stayed the same. And also he didn't go through nearly as serious of an injury.
And that is understandable, but he's also going later than Gerrit Cole. And
marginally later.
30 picks. And I
according
said,
to
you know,
FBC.
Yeah. And I like I said, I expect the price to drop. You know, give him some time. He hasn't thrown a pitch at the major league level since July 4th of last year. I mean,
but that,
I
just think the same rationale could be said if he ends up having a good outing, because he did strike out three in the first inning. I mean, he had a nice first inning. So if he does have a good outing his next go around, then I think that that's the completely opposite theory. I think people will probably end up shooting him upwards.
I know this doesn't mean anything. I watched the game. The two strikeouts he got Fowler on a pitch that was high, and he got Diaz on a pitch that was low out of the zone. I mean, they're still strikeouts, but they shouldn't have been. If that makes sense.
Well, we'll have to agree to disagree. But let's move on to the next two guys, Julio Urias and Sean Manaea. Matt, you're kind of our prospect guy. Who do you take out of these guys?
I'll make this really, really simple for you. I'm going Manaea only because I play a lot of my main leagues for Jelly Beans are head-to-head formats, and Manaea is going to pitch at least 30, if not 40 innings more than Urias is going to pitch this season. So that makes the decision really easy for me because I think Manaea is probably going to be cut off at 180. Urias only threw just over 120 last year. I can't see him going above the 140 inning mark. So, I mean, that makes the decision really easy.
Doug?
I want to take both, but it's and in fact, I would take both. I probably have taken both, I think, already. I mean, I really like both of these guys. With Urias, absolutely, you have to weigh in the fact that he's probably not going to get many wins if the team babies him again. He's not going to be able to even get the five innings or the six innings necessary, sticking into the game long enough. The innings count is going to be limited, but I see the growth that this kid has shown already. And, I mean, mechanically, I mean, stuff-wise, he ticked up 5 miles an hour in the span of 1 year. Actually, it was one season from March until August, actually, of that season. To see already what he's done, he's completely morphed his delivery mechanically two different times with great results both times. And he might already have the best left-handed quick pickoff move in the majors. It's just so fun watching him pitch. I think that his innings will be useful. They will be meaningful. But he's going to be killed in single-year leagues because of the innings count, because of the lack of wins. So if I had to choose one, I'd choose Manaea for that reason. But I really like both of them. And Manaea was nuts. The second half last season, I think from July 10th on, he had like a 2.44 ERA or something like that. It was nuts.
I forgot you could choose both. If I had to choose both, if I could, I would. But if I have to pick one and only one, I go Manaea.
Mike, what are you doing?
Like them both, I have Manaea as my 34th starting pitcher this year, and I think he's in for a breakout season. I love Urias. I love what I saw from him last year, not just numbers-wise, but just mechanically. He's very mature for his age, but like you guys have already said, the innings I don't think will be there for Urias, and I'm going to lean Manaea.
I would probably take both, though I think Manaea is going a little bit too high considering he did deal with some injury issues last year. The A's have nothing to play for, so I think they may baby him a little bit more than you guys think they will. Urias, to me, there definitely is some, you know, a workload concern in terms of how many innings you're going to get out of him, but they're going to be fantastic innings, in my opinion. And I actually wonder if the Dodgers may be forced to rely on him a little bit more than what you guys are thinking. I mean, look at that rotation. Rich Hill, Maeda, Cashmere. You know, and guys like Brandon McCarthy in the wings, Hyunjin Ryu in the wings. Those are guys that aren't going to hold up over the course of the season. They may be kind of forced to ride Urias out. Maybe, you know, in quality start leagues, he's a guy you might want to, you know, downgrade a tad because they may kind of take away innings in games as opposed to out over the course of the season. But I think they're going to be forced to ride him a little bit more, and I think he is a strong enough kid to be able to do so. So I'm a little bit more encouraged by him, and if I got to take one over the other, I'm definitely taking Urias because I think Manaea is getting a little bit too much helium so far this year.
It's incredibly frustrating with how much the Dodgers have babied Urias. Mm-hmm. Like
Just because they have, I think it actually make a great point, and just because they have in the past doesn't necessarily mean that they will in the future. We're kind of assuming that they're going to continue to baby him, but we don't know that they will. This is a guy that, yeah, there's a Verducci rule in the third innings, and you know it's hard to imagine him getting more than 150 this year professionally, but if he's that good and if they have a need, I mean, we did just see Aaron Sanchez last year who jumped like 90 innings or whatever, and now we're going to see the results of that, and it's only one player, but there's one thing I can't stand. It's how homogenized the rules have become for developing young pitchers and trying to prevent injury when, in effect, every guy is a different living, breathing human being, and especially when you've got someone like Urias who has been – he has morphed so much. I mean, we know he's an elite talent, but we've already seen him change as much as he has. I have no idea what he can withstand. Only the Dodgers really know that, and – it's up to them what they're going to do, and the fantasy community can only guess. And so I would guess the same thing, 140, 150 innings, sure. But if they let him go for 175 or 180, or maybe they had to, I can't say I'd be totally shocked.
Yeah, and I wouldn't blame him because, I mean, are you really going to rely on the guys they have in AAA too? I mean, I know Mike and Matt, you've mentioned liking Brock Stewart. And I mean, I think he's...
Yep, they got Ross Stripling. Stripling's kind of interesting.
With Alex Spinner. Wood.
But Stripling is... At best, a middle relief guy.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And Alex Wood is about as fragile as the rest of the rotation. So, I mean, to me, it's, you know, if he's going, the one thing that will take a team who has prospects and be willing, have them willing to stop caring about their long-term future is if you're winning and you need to win. And this is a team that needs to win now. Not because they have a bright future ahead of them, but they've got a lot of pressure. They've spent a lot of money, and that front office wants to win. And this is one of those years where they could, you know, maybe take advantage. If he's pitching strong, they're not going to, you know, they're not going to then pump the brakes. They're going to go for the win.
They've got the farm system to go get pretty much almost anyone that would be available. Also,
yeah, so. That's true. But who's really going to be available?
Jose Quintana. Just this name off the top of my head.
Considering what the White Sox have gotten in hauls for Adam Eaton already, Chris Sale. I mean, are the Dodgers, you know, the Dodgers weren't willing to give up Bellinger for Dozier. You know, are they going to be willing mid-season to give up, you know, more for Jose Quintana?
Mid-injury needs in the mid-season create desperate times. So you never know.
They
need another lefty, so sure.
Yeah, they got so many lefties. Yeah, they don't need another one.
Let's finish out with these last two guys: Jared Eichhoff, James Paxton, Mike. Who are you taking?
I'll take them both. I'll keep it simple. I like them both based on their costs. I think that their skills have grown. I know Paxton is catching a lot of helium, but it really hasn't shown in terms of his draft cost quite yet. He's still, you know, going outside the top 175, according to NFBC. Eichhoff is a really slept on guy as well. His stuff, his curveball is, you know, obvious. Everybody knows about that. But in general, I'm trying to keep it pretty simple. I love them both based on where they're going, and I think that they'll both be really, really solid this year.
Matt, who are you taking?
Eichhoff, if I have to pick. I think Paxton's a little bit overrated going into this year. I think he's getting a little too much hype. I think Eichhoff is underrated. Like Mike said, the curveball. We got to love the innings. He almost pitched 200 innings last year in his really first full season as in the major league rotation. He's kind of a guy that was slept on a little bit coming over from the Rangers. But, I like Eichhoff a lot. He's a guy I'm targeting late, that's for sure. So.
All right, Doug, who are you taking?
Neither.
Oh, wow.
What? Okay.
These guys. Yeah. And I know Paxton throws crazy hard, and I know about the curveball, and hey, you know, I like their stuff, but right now, especially Paxton, the helium in my hand is kind of sick. Yeah. And he's someone who, delivery-wise, he always had a very weird delivery. He had a huge point up in the sky, almost like he's trying to shoot, you know, down the moon with a bow and arrow, something like that. And he has really calmed it down. and it's actually helped him line up the gears so that he's getting a little bit more velocity. So there's here I am giving mechanical excuses for why he's improved. But I think the walk rate is going to bounce up. I think that it's kind of the case with Duffy, where even in his breakout season, the dude had a 3.79 ERA. He had a 1.31 whip. I mean, we're extrapolating what he might do because his stuff is nuts and because he had some crazy peripherals last year. But he also gave up 10 hits per nine. If his 97 is so effective, why is he giving up so many base hits? And I get the base hits have their flaws and everything, but when you're giving up that many, I watched this with Kevin Gausman time and time again. I kept predicting that he was going to break out, but then I kept seeing guys pulling his 97-mile-an-hour heat. It was like, wait a second, what's going on? Batters were just getting a good look at the pitch, and there's something to be said for Paxton has brought down the bow and arrow a little bit, but he's maybe giving batters a better view of the baseball. So I don't like him anywhere near where his ADP is right now. And Eichhoff, I like fine. I think if he failed me at the right point, I would go ahead and take him. I think he was on pretty much all my teams last year because no one knew who he was. But now everyone seems to know who he is. And I just think that his value is it's probably about where it should be. But there's other guys that I'm more interested in around that level.
Yeah, for me, I'm taking Paxton. I'll take the 97 from him from the left-hand side with improving command. So I know the price has been elevated because I'm looking at his NFBC numbers right now, and somebody took him around pick 100.
See, that's insane.
Like, see, that to me is insane. And like, and there have been times in drafts where people have jumped over me, to go get him, but I've been getting him around the 160, 170 point, and later than that. So, like that for me, I still feel like is a pretty good deal, and it's worth the upside. Eichhoff to me, I don't think he has a great fastball, and he doesn't really have a great third pitch yet. So to me, it's like all about the curveball, and it's not a great park. It's a team that I think a lot of people are kind of betting on the come right now, but I don't think it's necessarily a great team. In terms of winability and getting wins, I like him, but I just don't see this huge upside that I think other people do. And for that reason, I'm probably not going to pay the price. I'd rather take other guys going around the same area, like Carlos Rodon, Garrett Richards going 50 plus picks later. So that to me, I'm probably out on Eichhoff.
I love Carlos Rodon. I have this unreasonable infatuation with Carlos Rodon, and he will probably sink my team's ratios again this year. Now,
you guys did a great breakdown of him, and that's why I sniped him in front of you in the barf draft.
Bastard. That explains it.
Definitely go check out that Rodon breakdown a couple episodes ago on the Baseball Holics podcast. It was definitely one of the reasons why I pushed him up a round or two in that draft to make sure Sammy or Doug didn't get him.
Well played.
Savage. That will wrap us up for this episode. See, kept it under an hour and a half. Doug,
we're not done
thank
yet.
You for joining us.
You got it. Thanks for having me on, guys. I love talking about this stuff with you guys. It's fantastic.
Thank you.
We'll definitely have you on again. But please, tell people where you can reach on social media and then give yourself some plugs.
They can reach me at Doug_Thorburn. I'm doing most of my work over at RotoWire right now. They can also find my stuff over at Baseball Prospectus and with RotoGrinders. And check out the podcast, Baseball Holics Anonymous. It's very much a group therapy for all of us baseball holics. And I know all of you guys are true baseball holics at heart. So that's why it's so fun talking to you.
Yeah, it's, we're still kind of going through a little bit of like a detox phase because we're still going through withdrawals. We haven't quite gotten like the full baseball, fix yet, but we're starting to. We're being teased. Like, this is the time in which your dealer is giving you just a little to keep you, coming back.
Yeah, so. He's like, this is what's on tap.
Exactly.
Obviously, we're addicted. We're watching Israel versus Chinese Taipei. So,
Matt, what are you working on? Where can you be reached?
Well, MD Tump, FWFB, do the prospect rankings over at the site, Prospect Pod with Mike and our boy Andy on Wednesdays. So be sure to check that out. I'll update the rankings again soon. I mean, nothing too much has happened besides the Reyes injury to where I've had to change anything. So hopefully nobody else gets hurt, because you never want to see prospects go down. But yeah, keep listening to us here. Doug, thanks for coming on, man. We always love you having you on. Yeah, that's it.
Mike, where can you reach? What are you working on?
Drafting a lot right now. So just I have so many drafts going on. I actually did do a CBS auction today. Scott White kind of headed that from CBS, and it was really a lot of fun to do a mixed auction. I only mentioned it once, Justin. So the fact that you mentioned yours three times, and I mentioned mine once, I think that's a win for me. But
most everybody's tuned out by now.
Yeah, we're over an hour and a half now, Justin.
Nope, 116.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I'm getting through all these drafts. I, like Matt said, we do that prospect show. It's been getting a lot of really good feedback, and we're going to be going through some starting pitchers this week as well. So make sure you tune into that. And then also my daily matchups column on Baseball HQ this upcoming season as well.
You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. Email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. Read all my stuff either on friendsoffantasybenefits.com or on Fangraphs. Before I go on vacation, I will do an update of our rankings, so that way you guys have a whole bunch of new rankings for your drafts coming up. Speaking of which, I will be on vacation next week. So if there's a little bit of lag time with posting of podcasts and things like that, never fear. They will be coming out. Mike is going to be handling the majority of that, and I appreciate that, Mike.
Oh, thanks. I didn't even know about this, but
yeah. Gotcha. We also I got my delivery of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits t-shirts today. So
the navy blue one looks like my favorite. The navy blue on Yancey Eaton was like really,
actually,
really nice.
They are all pretty sick, because each different color gives the logo a different tint.
Nice.
I'll tweet out some pictures here in a little while, so you can go check that out either on my Facebook page or on my Twitter page. They look sick. I will start giving those away when I get back from vacation. So in 2 weeks from today, we will give away our first Friends of Fantasy Benefits t-shirt. If you want to be entered to win one of those, give us a 5-star review. Send it to me on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits, or via the email friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Each week I will, or twice a month, I will give away either a Friends of Fantasy Benefits t-shirt, or I will give away some Rec Room gear that I got from our good buddy R-Bar Todd at the Rec Room in San Francisco. So definitely do that. If you want to get into a listener league, I have this week to fill it up. So we need a few more people to fill up the second one. If that happens, we will get that one going. If we don't get enough people, then I'm sorry, you'll still be entered to win a shirt and gear. We need at least 12 people to get that going. I think we're at 4 or 5 for the second one. So rush over, give us a review, really helps us out. That is going to wrap us up. For Matt, Mike, Doug, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season. Bitches.